My name is Jason Spies, and this is the Decade of Discussion Collection here at The Crude Life. Thank you, folks, for joining us here today. And in this special episode, we sit down with Brian Lash. He is the founder of Target Logistics. We had the opportunity to meet Mr. Lash in 2014, where we discussed his decision to leave medical school and start a sports entertainment travel company, which springboarded him into temporary housing in Iraq and the Winter Olympics. Then, the oil and gas industry. It is quite a story from Brian Lash, the founder of Target Logistics. He also describes what the early days were like in the Bakken, where people were just walking up, signing contracts right there on the spot. That was the heyday of the Bakken back in 2014. This is Brian Lash, the founder of Target Logistics, as part of our Decade of Discussion collection here at The Crude Life.
Brian Lash, founder and chairman, Target Logistics.
Well, let's start with the genesis of Target Logistics. So how did Target Logistics get started? And walk me through your first days.
Okay. Well, how far back you want me to go? To my days in college, looking for a way out of medical school?
That sounds pretty good to me, Noah. How did you come up with the idea for this?
Okay. So I was on my way to medical school. Got disenchanted, wanted to really be a businessman, and wanted to be in a business that let me do the two things that I love the most, which is sports and travel. So I started a sport travel company, and that was in 1978. I was 21 years old. I had $3,800 and ran the business out of my apartment. Started off doing ski tours in the winter and teaching tennis in the summer, and then started going year-round with adventure travel, whitewater rafting, golf, scuba, sailing. And then got into the special event travel business, working for the Orange Bowl, taking all the teams to the football game, the bands for the parade, the tennis players for the Rolex Junior Tennis Tournament. And that from the Orange Bowl, I got to work full-time, well, not full-time, I was the exclusive tour and travel operator for Florida State, did all their sports travel, and then from there, started doing special events like Woodstock and Olympic Games. And as my involvement in the Olympic Games got bigger, and it was all, for me, about scalability, I started not doing individuals to the Olympics, but started handling countries, Denmark, Norway, huge corporations like Motorola, and finally, the U.S. government. So started working a lot with security. And come the aftermath of 9/11, Target Logistics housed thousands of federal agents that were brought in to lock down Salt Lake against another invasion. Thousands of U.S. military also to protect the Olympics from terrorism. While that was going on, we were also invited to bid on projects in Iraq. And we won a very large project in Iraq to build and operate a man camp for 2,200 soldiers. And we operated for the DOD in Basra during the second Iraq invasion. Had that for a number of years. Simultaneously, figured if we're doing it in a war zone, three quarters of the way around the world, we could certainly do it for Hess and Halliburton. And I was continuing my Olympic work, built a very large but temporary city for Olympic security in Whistler for the Vancouver Olympic Games, where the Alpine venues were. It slept 1,700 people, and it was only operable for 70 days. Halliburton came and saw it while it was up and being used for Olympic security and said, we want that building, because it was built for extreme weather conditions, and it was very efficient. It took up a small footprint. It was tall. It was multiple stories, made of 185 8x40 containers. We moved that here to Williston, North Dakota in April of 2010, immediately after the Olympics ended in March. And that was our first asset here in North Dakota.
Was Williston.
But oddly, even though the whole camp, the lodge, was brought to Williston in April, we opened another lodge first that was made of more traditional modular projects, which today is called our Williston North Lodge. So that opened first. The Halliburton facility, now called the Muddy River Lodge, opened second. And in 2010, I was sitting right here. I had a booth at this show and was literally writing orders sitting at my booth. My whole life I spent trying to sell people on my products and services, but it was very rare that there was ever a line to sign contracts with me. And that's what was happening in 2010. I already had Halliburton as a client. Thank God, they're the greatest folks. Then we landed some other illustrious clients like Hess, and did a great job, and word spread, and we became the dominant player in our industry, not only in the Bakken, but in the United States in a matter of 3-4 years. So,
what do you make of the Bakken, just as a 5,000-foot view from your perspective and your background? As far as maybe where do you see it going in your industry, but also overall? Because you do talk to a lot of very key people in the industry.
Well, I'd like to find the next Bakken, but I don't know if it exists, because this, for us, in a great way, was a perfect storm. You have a lot of oil. You have good oil. It's efficient and economical to mine. You have a region of the United States that's fairly desolate with very little infrastructure and very cold. That adds up to a huge demand for life support, quality life support, or otherwise known as remote workforce housing. In Texas, there's a lot of oil, but there's also a lot of infrastructure, lots of small towns, lots of fast food, lots of small motels and apartment complexes, and you can actually sleep in an RV if you wanted to and make it through the winter. So, as far as our growth here in the Bakken goes, we're very happy with our current position. We've probably got 60-70% market share. We have over 4,200 bedrooms here in North Dakota. We're running over 90%. We are very proud of what we've accomplished, but I still think there's some growth. We have some clients we're talking to about maybe expanding a few locations, but simultaneously we have some locations that are getting smaller, because we had the gigantic facility we built for Hess with 1,100 rooms and 100 slot RV park, and that was for their gas plant, which is now done. So that's our only lodge that's not full, really, in North Dakota. So we're moving slower, but we still see a little bit of growth. I think we could grow another 10% in the Bakken in the next 12 to 24 months, or we may not grow at all, but we're certainly not going to shrink, because we are almost full.
How many locations do you have now?
In
North Dakota.
In North Dakota, I think we have 11.
11? Former Governor Schaefer sits on the board of directors for Continental Resources. He's spoken to me about how changing some of the regulations and the tax laws allowed that oil and gas movement to cross borders from Canada into the United States. Canada and the United States have some different rules and regulations. How does that play into your particular industry? I've heard that Canada almost welcomes these manufactured crew camps, temporary crew camps, almost with open arms. What do you make about the relationship or the regulation differences between Canada and the United States?
Canada is more accepting of workforce housing than almost all the communities in America that do have oil or minerals. It's more of a way of life, particularly in the oil sands. And on a self-serving basis, I'd like to see a little more support for what we do, because we are necessary to allow the economic growth and to prevent a real estate bubble from popping. If Williston and other communities keep building to meet what they think is an endless demand, there will come a reckoning. Workforce housing can be the band-aid, can be the bridge. Until such time that things level off, our facilities can be built, can be operable, and can be moved, and we can remediate the land back to farmland or whatever use the community thinks is appropriate. But you can't pick up 180 apartments and move them. You can't pick up a residential development of 1,000 homes. And as motel and hotel operators are finding out, you can't pick up a brick and mortar hotel and move it. And occupancy is starting to fall in almost every city in the Balkan. And rents are going to start falling in the apartment complexes. This is why Target Logistics is necessary. We run the safest, cleanest, best operation in the industry. We're great stewards and custodians, and we're very respectful of the community. And we give a lot back, not because we're gratuitous and not because we're trying to earn favor, but because we believe in the communities in which we serve. We encourage our employees to move, bring their children, their husbands and wives, join the churches, and we give back. We call it giving back to the Balkan, because we believe that we are fortunate to be operating in the backyard of these great communities. With that said, more workforce housing should be encouraged. And I think that the apartment developers, hotel developers, and residential developers are going to, hopefully not soon, but one day, there's going to be an oversupply. And that's where we come in. We're a manager of that, you know, and it's important.
Two things I've heard at this conference. One, to validate your rent comment that the rents will have to be pushed down considerably, maybe even upwards of 50% in the next 6 to 8 months for a lot of this stuff to be foreseeable. The second is that a lot of these apartments and hotels, they're basing it on a 30-year 100% occupancy in their pro formas. Now, that might be a little bit exaggerated of conference talk, but what you just told me kind of falls in line with what I just said. What do you make of some of those, just the housing in general, in terms of, say, Dickinson, Bismarck, some of the places more on the interstate versus, say, like a Williston or Tioga, which you got to drive to get to civilization a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can see where these temporary camps might come in pretty handy.
Not only are we great to modulate the real estate pricing, rent, expected rent, expected occupancy, and all that, but it's really hard for them to compete with us. We have a very compelling economic model. Our average client is paying $115 per room per night, includes your room, three unlimited and fabulous meals a day, unlimited and free recreation, unlimited and free use of the internet, unlimited and free use of laundry machines and detergent. Even the DVDs are free. And it's a community. There's a lot of social engineering that goes on, and we create bonds that are hard to break. So if you're living in the Bear Paw Lodge and you work for Halliburton and you've been living there with 500 other Halliburton guys for 6 months and you play poker with Bob and Steve and Robert every Monday night and you play football with another group of guys every Tuesday night and you lift weights every morning with your workout partner, well, when a competitive Halliburton comes along and offers you another dollar an hour, it's not worth it to jump ship, because it means you're leaving your home, you're leaving your community, you're leaving your friends, and everything's being paid for by the customer. But if the customer looks at paying $115 versus going to the comfort suites like I'm staying at tonight, okay, I'm in Bismarck, but I'm paying $149. But in Williston, you're going to pay $149 also, and it doesn't include meals. So what would you rather pay, $115 with meals and know that your guys are well cared for, there's a noise curfew, there's no drinking, there's no drugs, there's no weapons, there's no cohabitation, you know where your men are, you know what time they're getting up in the morning, you know they're well fed and well rested, or you want to put them in a motel, give them a per diem for food, and hope that they don't spend that at the local ballet, if you catch my drift.
So what you're talking about leads me into my next question, which starts with a comment, which is, I just got back from Vegas a few weeks ago, and one of the things that they were talking about was 15,000, 20,000 kids graduating with no jobs. there's no jobs in the workplace for them down in Las Vegas. A couple of the parents were recommending the oil patch over the Army because of all those regimented reasons you just gave. What do you, just your comment on that as far as parents now recommending going out and work in the oil patch because it's more regimented than the Army is. What do you think of that?
I think parents are recommending that their kids go to the oil patch, not so much for the regimentation, but for the economic gain. I have friends and friends' children who have come out here, some to work for my company and some to work for others, because there is no place in America where an 18-year-old without a college education can make $100,000 a year, pay nothing in rent, pay nothing for food, and after taxes, and after vacations, and after coming home every 6 weeks for a two-week holiday, can bank $50,000 or $60,000 a year. Imagine you're 18 years old, you come here for 5 years, you got a five-year plan, and after 5 years, you're gonna have $250 million in the bank, you're gonna go home, you're gonna buy a Subway franchise, and now you've got the American dream. You're your own businessman, you have your own, and you're 23 years old, you got no debt, and yes, while you're out here, you're keeping your nose clean, because I can't speak for my competitors' facilities, but you try to come into our facility after you've been drinking, you get locked out. You come, you make noise after 10 o'clock, you get thrown out. If you try to bring drugs or alcohol into our facility, we notify your employer, you lose your job and your bed. It's strict, but it works. And the people that stay with us love it because it's for the enjoyment of everyone that we have to make these rules. Are we stricter than the Army? I don't think so. But in a lot of ways, we're similar. And guess what? One in every four of my employees is ex-military. So this didn't just invent this stuff. You know, we went out through doing many, many different temporary facilities around the world, both for Katrina and Arizona, for a copper mine, and in Iraq. We learned that what things are going to work and what things aren't going to fly. And so our formula, our secret sauce, is more than just, you know, some... It didn't just fall from the sky.
That your comments about the brotherhood really stood out as far as that Army correlation to me, because you develop a family within your workforce housing. Really, I've seen it firsthand. I know about it. I know about the professional chefs you guys have on staff. I've talked to people who stay there. They absolutely love it. A couple of the guys like it because of the rules, actually. They think they'd be out carousing if they didn't have those rules, but their family back home in Illinois means more to them than a couple beers after 10 o'clock.
And think about how much more money you save when you're not out at the bars every night. You know, one drink becomes five, and it's not so cheap in Williston these days. You know, $4 and $5 beers is more common than ever. I mean, when I first started coming here in 2009, it's $2 for a long neck.
Yeah.
You know, those days are over. So it's...
They must have thought you were a local. Well, final comments are yours. Whatever you want people to, the listeners, the readers, the live streamers, I guess, or the YouTubers, just what you want people to remember and know about Target Logistics.
Well, I think two things are really important. One is our mantra, wherever you go, whatever it takes. We have operated in the harshest environments, even war zones, harsh environments that are desolate or cold or in the jungle, or it doesn't matter, we're up to the task. And so we've met deadlines for Olympic Games that are unheard of, building a 1,700 person temporary city into a mountain across the street from the Whistler ski resort in 72 days. But the other thing that's important is what we call the economics of comfort. That if our clients entrust their employees to live in our facilities, that will return them to the workplace every morning, better fed, better rested, with a greater sense of morale and enjoyment, and therefore they'll be more productive and more safe in the workplace. The return on investment is what we call the economics of comfort. Our clients get back every dollar and more that they invest when they have their people stay at Target Logistics workforce lodges because of the reasons that are seen each day in productivity and safety. And you can't ever put a dollar value on human life. But productivity is also the other thing that, you know, most of these companies are Wall Street traded companies. that people are looking at, and we've proven that our guests are more productive and there's less attrition when they stay at our facilities. So that's the economics of comfort.
Mr. Brian Lash, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good stuff. Thank
you. And that was Brian Lash, the founder of Target Logistics, here on the Crude Life Decade of Discussion. Thank you, folks, for tuning in and listening to that awesome interview. Please remember to like, subscribe, and follow all of our Crude Life content, social media pages, etc., as we continue to roll out every single week a new Decade of Discussion interview with one of the legends in oil and gas. Today was the awesome interview with Brian Lash, the founder of Target Logistics. Who will it be next week? Stay tuned, folks. Remember, check out thecrudelife.com for daily content. My name is Jason Spies. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Decade of Discussion collection here at The Crude Life.